There's something.
So Anthony and I were just talking about, some client cases and where the difficulty of fat loss can really start. And I think there's sort of this idea that trickles down from the top fitness. And this isn't a new idea, right? We see bodybuilders and, female elites and everybody that's talking about, don't break these rules, don't do these things. And we were talking about, we could take an anecdotal study of my entire roster. Which is 50% general population and functional health, and then 50% sort of competing or aspiring competitors or very serious physique development clients who just love it because they love it. Fair enough. And most females are not going to be eating over 2,000 calories like with visible abs. Like it's I've almost barely seen that, to be honest. And
Most of
somewhere
them
that
aren't going to eat, most of them aren't even going to eat over 1,500 calories with
I'm
visible
trying to
abs.
be very, very nice, right now with where I'm starting this conversation. And, that's like, I'm saying I don't see it in 10 years. Like I seen it like three times where I've had clients in a decade of doing this eat over around 2,000 calories and have visible abs and, kind of cap delts. I'm not talking competing lean, not even close. I'm talking like, lower body fats to notice. And these ideas that we can just find these things so easy without difficulty, because Anthony made a point about he said I was paying attention to a lot of your clients who you've dieted this year, and then one of the themes is they're not pain free. That's not the way he said it, but basically, like I noticed, like once in a while, it's like, geez, this is difficult. That's the message he's picking up from a variety of clients, ages, different walks of life. It's you're not just gonna like stumble upon one of these physiques that people gawk at or that you aspire to. And I think that that's a very poor way that we're translating information. And I think that's a byproduct of having so much good quality information is if it's like if I take Anthony, Braden, and Dylan's wizardry and mix it into a spell, then I can get around the hard stuff. And that's happening over, I'm very making a joke of that, but because I don't think that's actually what people do. But over time, I think that's like a hypnosis of what's happened hundreds of times in very micro sort of, relatability, situations where it's building up this ideology that I can take all these optimization strategies and deploy them. And I will get around, and I'm guilty of this myself a lot, like in the past. And that's how I know it happens so well. And I have a question for you. So why do you think there's such a, because I think this is why you and I, and I'm not saying we don't have our daily struggles. You just were talking about how, Mark bombed you. And it's like, it's been a little bit of a, you notice it. It's like
But I asked for it because there's a purpose.
yeah, well, you're wrestling with the future capacity that you could become, right? Because it's like, well, I'm leveraging the fact I can do this difficult thing against the curiosity of what the hell will I be like or who will I become if I can tackle this difficult thing that's been given to me. So why do you think that people are choosing? How do you think we're con because I think we're confusing difficulty with value. And I think that's why we get so many clients who seem to want to move forward so bad, or not even clients, but just prospects or people that you can see putting their fitness journeys on social media because so many people use it as a documentation process. And they're never quite getting to that place where they're deriving positive emotion. And I think it's because just because something's difficult doesn't mean it's going to make derive value to that individual. As where I'm deriving a ton of value, like even if I never get to the physique that I think I can get to, which I think I've placed in a realistic basket, I learned a new lesson today from making myself do something I didn't want to do, really. Like I looked at this pec deck and I was like, oh, a muscle round on here, this is going to be brutal, And because I have an indication of, expertise, let's say, it's one of these pec decks where I was like, I'm going to really be able to lock in on that. I'm going to be stuck on the pec. And then I thought, oh, a muscle round, that's going to be difficult. I didn't have much sleep last night. We went to, a wedding, and I'm on the afterburn effects of some LSD. So I'm like, geez, that's going to be difficult. So it wasn't about muscle building anymore. It wasn't about the look, because yes, although I have a goal physique, I'm in the trenches learning the daily lessons that the difficult things I've chosen to do and the path I have to follow along this difficulty that I think will end me up in a better place. And that map is kind of set, but it's flux. It's okay if it moves a little bit.
Yeah.
So like I'm chasing a physique, but I'm chasing the lessons daily. And I think people are skipping over that potentially.
They are, because I actually had the same thing today. So
I knew you'd have something on this. So that's why I wanted to.
So I had my hurt foot, right? I haven't been able to do cardio or steps or anything. So I get to this morning and I'm like, this is normally a day that I do cardio. I always take off Saturday because it's day after legs and I don't feel like doing cardio on day after legs. So I get on the cardio machine, right? I'm there doing the treadmill. I started with the treadmill because I didn't know, because I didn't want to push things too hard on my foot. Well, I looked at the time it would take to fucking do the treadmill. And I was like, fuck, this is going too slow. So what do I decide to do? Well, I hop on my recumbent bike. I just put the hood up and I just fucking go. And I get to around 20-ish minutes on the bike. I already did like 40 calories on the on the treadmill. But so that means I had another 335 calories to go to hit my goal. I'm about 20 minutes onto this bike and I'm like just under halfway. I'm like, fuck, how long is this going to take me to fucking do? Because I'm normally doing the elliptical in 24 minutes. Normally I'm done. I got 4 more minutes. I'm done. Right. And I'm sitting there the whole time and I'm like, maybe I should cut this in half. Maybe I should do this later. Maybe I should just stop and just say, oh, my foot hurts, and use that kind of as an excuse to why I should stop. No, I actually adjusted my foot and just kept fucking going. And I felt really satisfied out of finishing. Like I sat there for a moment and I was like, okay, you know, I might not be at the heart rate that I would love to do cardio at, and I would love to push things harder. But I also realized that I derived a ton of value from pushing harder at one point by actually getting hurt because it led to the overuse. Yeah. So I had to take that lesson over what I did. And I'm like, okay, well, I had to sacrifice something here. And my sacrifice was the time of how much I'm going to have to do cardio for to hit my caloric goal. I'm like, you have to be today in the mid. Once I got done my thing, once I got done it, I sat there and I was like, okay, now I know where I need to be at. Now I know how much time it's going to take me. I am perfectly okay with doing this for the amount of time I need to do it because it's the job that needs to get done. I think a lot of people look at social media and they derive value by how the look is, right? Because that's exactly what social media is. Everyone shows the good parts.
Well, and you're getting rewarded for showcasing these perceived good parts.
Yeah, you're getting these likes, follows, shares,
status, like, variety, whatever
like,
it means.
Like it's just like ping ping. It's like dopamine from look. Right. But I was actually talking about this today with someone on Instagram, and we were like, you know, social media fucking sucks. Why? Because no one will talk about this exact thing that we're talking about, where you have to be able to do the hard shit. Like we've talked about this plenty of times, but it keeps coming around because we keep seeing it as a pattern now that everyone wants to talk about dieting at 2000 calories or dieting at 2500 calories. Like they want to share these unicorns. I call them fucking unicorns. If you could diet on 2500 calories as a female, you're a unicorn. Let's just get that straight. Like I think a lot of people don't, I think they get a misunderstanding over what is technically hard. Right? Because we've both been through actual hard moments. And we've been through hard things in life where these things are like beneath that, but we derive so much value from it because it's the challenge of getting it done. Because there's always going to be something, no matter what, there's always going to be something in the mind that's going to tell you this fucking sucks. Like every single time I go to lift, every single time I I'm waiting like at that third hour to fucking eat. Like, it's just do it now. Like, do it now, do it now, do it now. Right? Because the body's telling you I'm fucking hungry, right? Or something like that. Like, I'll eat meals like 3.5 hours. And at 3 hours, it's like, do it now. It's like, no, I gotta say I stuck to this meal time because that's what I know. That's how my body functions. And that's what will give me the reward. And I even get a reward out of that, right? Like, making it to the next meal time, to the set time that I want to eat, I get a reward. I feel great about doing that. Like, it's just something about thriving in struggle that maybe it comes from our past that allows us to get through that and find value within that. But I think some people go through life and they've been so kind of coddled now, and everything's kind of a little bit, I wouldn't say softer, because I'm still in that age group where you would consider, like, technically I fall into that same generation, I guess. But a lot of people, like, they were given a lot of things, and the one time they have to work for it, and normally it's the physique, it's the hardest thing to get for them. It's because they don't understand to what depths they can do. And I think that that's also the hardest thing, is a lot of people don't understand what they can do, and they tell themselves how much they can't do it, and that also affects it too. So I think it all encompassing really is like a conglomerate of like social media, where we are in the world right now, how you grew up, and what type of suffering in quotations did you go through as in childhood, and then, because that directly relays upon bodybuilding. Like, it's nothing for us. Like, it's literally just like nothing. Like, as much as that sucked, that cardio session this morning, nothing compared to what I've been through.
You know, what do you think about some of this? So, first off, I have to give you a thank you, you know, because there's, you know, as a friend, we've grown really close, and now as colleagues, it's really interesting, you know, the way the last year and a little bit has transpired. And I want, you know, I had some time and I've been thinking about this podcast and the direction that, you know, we might be taking it. And I thought, man, it's really interesting how I got to listen to some of the episodes that are still up, right? Because that's the interesting thing about media. And I got to listen to some of our original episodes and I thought, wow, these are really valuable. However, there was something that I just couldn't, I'm listening to the episode objectively on what I'm trying to pick out the differences of improvement on my own personal development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's say, right. So it's not so much the episode itself, but there's like something that I want to drink there that I don't really know what it is, but I have a thirst for something. And now I feel like, wow, I don't feel that same way about how I would view that situation, question, whatever it might be. And I think some of that is because through these conversations, you start to figure out like what your actual strengths and weaknesses are and where some of your biases may have lay, you know, and you start to pick that apart because you think like, well, if I say that now, I have to be able to stand on that bridge in 3 months from now in this other situation, and you can scale that idea.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I better be sure about what I'm saying, and I better be tact about my speech and all these different things. And, you know, so I think a lot of these deep conversations are really fun. And one of the things I think you and I do, and you can, you know, share what you think about this after, but very differently, but the same, because you're kind of you're very industrious and I'm very trait open and conscientious. So I think our creative endeavors come from different places, but you like to see 2 + 2 = 4. So you like to see defined outcomes, you know, based on the best strategy you can come up with at what you're aiming at. And I philosophize about what I would be like in that ideal. And I can actually see it and I can feel it psychophysiologically because my imagination is so powerful, which sparks the curiosity of like, what happens if I just try all these things that I have considered and I'm willing to do and should do that I think will end me up somewhere around that place that I've now imagined.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming at it from a different angle. But in that, there's an old idea that, You have to define the suck. And we're not doing this before we start on endeavors, right? So I have some of my personal goals that I can share right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the best coach within the entire country, I think I have the capacity to do that in a realistic time frame with a bunch of underlying things that will be necessary to do, right? That will be consistently carried out to the best of my abilities with the intention of bettering that ability. Without that, that goal is just a nightmare. It's not a dream. It's not a movement. It's not something I can move towards positively because it won't happen really. Certainly not in a time frame that's going to give me any feedback from myself or the world that it's happening, which will feel like insanity. And if I have good people in my circle that I can outsource some of that sanity and I ask them if they want the best for me, they'll tell me the truth and they'll tell me I'm not doing the things required to do that goal, right? You know, in any desired timeline. So we're defining the suck. So for instance, I know that I'm not going to have the most social period of the next 3 years of my life. Like that isn't going to be the me that gets to go out every weekend and socialize and stay up too late and have my next day productivity suffer because I'm aiming at a huge career goal, right? So if someone is sitting from the outside looking at my life and they've been on like three trips, you know, social trips where they just forget about their work for a week or two. And, you know, you're putting in 1 or 2 hours of work a day, but you have all this beautiful social life and all these other things going on, you know, day in and day out or every week. And, you know, you have, you know, a ton of social events planned. I don't have those things and many other things, but I've decided that that is okay for me right now.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't think I can go the rest of my life, certainly, without a bunch of things that I'm sacrificing. But I've made a decision, a conscious decision, that that's going to be okay. And I think some of the social media stuff that you're alluding to is kind of like, you can be anything you want, but you can't be everything you want right now. Where like, you can't be Anthony, the best bodybuilder, simultaneously being the best this and the best that. If you start to stack on, I'm not saying we can't be multidimensional, because I certainly am, and everyone has a different capacity for that. But you can go all in on like 2 to 4 things. I think most people very reasonably, especially if they're kind of intersectional, like ours are.
Yeah.
You know, like fitness podcast, fitness business, fitness physique, supplement company, you know, like they're all intersectional, and that's done on purpose, right? Because I'm trying to get the lowest hanging fruit from every single decision that I make. So if I make a good decision for Southland World, that's probably a good decision for Team Miller, probably a good decision for Coach Dylan, probably a good decision for the rest of the people inside of those networks that are all relying on him, and vice versa, right? So, you know, but the more, you know, sort of diverging the goals are, the harder it's going to be the best or get the most out of that specific time period in your life. And what I'm trying to do right now is break down the poor ideology of balance, I think, or social definition of it. I think like the Buddhist, you know, samurai, different cultured, you know, first Native American settlers, any of that, they all had this balance, which kind of meant like a spiritual balance of challenging the shit out of your body through the endeavors of survival, but keeping a very stoic mindset, being a protector or, you know, a provider or whatever it is, sort of atypical structure, Jungian structure that we're interscribing some of these old stories with. It doesn't matter, but we don't have as much external burden now. So we're all going to take a little bit more internal burden,
mm-hmm.
and that's hard for us to wrestle with. So we're going through this kind of transition period of, you know, what you alluded to, maybe of like the way the world's going. I think that's maybe a way of describing it.
Yeah.
But I'm always looking for the meaning in the challenges on the small scale. So yes, we're aiming at these grander, grandiose things that we may or may not get to, you know, and that's fine. But like you just said, you found a way to find this challenge in that moment of overcoming. So then you derived a bunch of positive neurochemistry, you know, or neurochemical reaction from like the overcoming of aiming at something difficult. And the only way you did something really beautiful, which you decided to quit the treadmill, but you replaced it with something more difficult or as difficult and sustainable over time or in the short term time frame of being injured. Right. So what you did is created a map that you got the positive emotion from right now, from doing the thing, the difficult thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then long term, you just put your psychology at peace because you created a sustainable plan on how to do this for the time being while you're downregulated. Bang on. Twofold, great plan, you know?
Well, actually, I found a third one. Sorry to interrupt.
Which is, no, I'm not interrupting.
But I mean, like, you know, I talked about this in my post, like what I learned, because I had that week and a half off where I wasn't even in the gym, right? And psychologically, that could ruin a bunch of bodybuilders, right? Like in general, like week off the gym, what they'd be blowing their brains out for most people. I took it as a sign of I needed it for a specific reason. And you know what happened during that time? I found the morning and night routine that I absolutely need. And in that, my blood glucose has been the best it's been. In that, I feel refreshed. I feel recovered. And in that, I've made decisions. I've been mentally able to make better decisions with my business, with my decision-making with my athletes. And overall, I was able to focus in on a few other things. Gave me time to go. It made me take time to diverge that one goal, which is my own physique goal, and channel everything into my routine and my athletes more. And it's something that I'm seeing in the future that I think is going to be very beneficial. Is there's always going to be a life after the physique thing. Like, even though I'm only 24, I still think about this because I don't live very normal for many 24-year-olds. Many 24-year-olds, at least in the United States, would probably be going partying every weekend, doing everything, right? Going on dates, doing those things. I haven't done that shit in like 3 years. I made a choice 2.5 years ago to go all in on this, right? And it's paying off. I get more dopamine now, right, than getting fucking trashed on the weekends. But I realized that, hey, I'm eventually at one point not going to want to have to train to absolute failure every single session to fucking put my body through what it's going through right now, to have to diet, to have to continue to like kind of restrict myself for what it is. But I know I only have a certain amount of time, which is exactly where last week really kind of hit me, is if I want to make the most of it, I need to optimize everything. It was the one thing I started to let go of, was my optimization of myself. And it's the one thing that I need to channel back in. And I was talking with a few others and I was like, if I can keep this morning and night routine that I have in the set way that I do it, outside of like Sundays when we do the podcast, right? Because we record pretty late. Obviously I'm off things at 8:30. So we're done at that. That's a closed book at that time. But it's like, if I'm able to just have 6 out of my 7 days a week, I'm in full control over the last 3 to 4 hours of my night. I'm like, okay, I'm good. I'm going to sit down and do exactly what I need to do. And I'm going to be the best. Why? Because in that week, it made me better for my athletes and it made my body better. So I'm listening. So I'm more so, I think a lot of people don't listen. I think a lot of people don't listen to what their body's actually telling them. And it's the one thing now that I'm trying to teach my athletes here. I'm like, you have to listen to what the body is saying. And I think a lot of people don't do that. Like when I asked Mark to push, there's a reason, because I came out of that week off fucking fresh. I came out of it fresh. I wasn't able to do cardio and I didn't know how my body would respond to cardio this week. So I was like, hey, Mark, let's fucking push. I was like, I think my body can handle it. I want to see what my body can do with everything going on, with everything added back in, with steps added back in, with cardio added back in, going into a further deficit, handling my athletes, handling my own physique, and then handling my full-time job. Like, all these different components, I want to see how much I can push my body, which is probably not the good answer here, but you got to see how far you can actually push yourself to go, right? There has to be a point where, you know, you make a choice. There has to be a crossroad where, hey, you can decide to choose to go down that easy path, or you can actually choose that difficulty, which you were talking about. And it's, I think a lot of people end up choosing that easy path because they think even though the longer route is there, you have to be willing to do difficult things. And I think this is something that we could take to our athletes, right? Is making them do difficult things. Like, because what will truly change the mindset of someone and make the things that we try to make simple to them click? It's by doing the difficult things, like putting them through one difficult training session could change everything, right? Putting them through one difficult diet could change everything. Like, putting them through that will trigger something within the mind to go to that next level, which is exactly what I'm hunting for right now in myself. Is I want to suffer a bit more because I truly want to see, because even though I'm not in prep, I want to see if I can get that extra 5 pounds off and what the fuck I'm going to have to do to get this next 5 pounds off. And I just want to see if it will happen. And if I have to take it to the fucking depths, I'm going to take it to the depths because I'm willing to, there's a thing now where I know I'm going to set myself up for great success in the next stage if I do it now.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a whole bunch I'd like to kind of unpack there, because one thing that you did very well with this week and a half off, right? Because I know that sometimes this stuff sounds like maybe benign when you're using these personal examples that you or I may go through on just like a small daily basis, right? Because it's like, well, Anthony just took a week and a half off. Yeah, but you have to consider that. Look at how, so I'm going to tell you some things I think, and you tell me what, you know, if I'm anywhere in the correct ballpark here. So even yourself, right, who people look up to as a young man, who I hold in great, great respect for being a young man and always trying to have this improvement lifestyle. And I'm not, you know, exonerated from this, or I don't think anyone is, where you got caught up in your own bullshit over time, because here's how, right? Because you're working a full-time job that comes with some pretty big responsibilities. And it's, I would say, in its own regard, kind of stressful, because you have to pay attention. That in its own regard is stressful. The second thing is you're trying very hard to build this, you know, coaching passion business, right? And you're trying, you know, you just got yourself into a, you know, let's say status jump with coming onto Team Miller.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
There's a whole bunch of things going on. And all of a sudden, Anthony has a really hard training session, comes home, and instead of doing his nighttime routine, because maybe you got a little bit behind because you got an influx of clients that you're not quite used to. So you get a little behind on your meal, which pushes back your training session, which pushes back your arrival time. All of a sudden, 3 nights in a row, you're like, you know what? No meditation tonight, because I still have to answer a few DMs. That's very important to get back to my social structures. And we create all this nonsense, right? And some of it might be true in the moment, but we're such creatures of habit that gets extended out. Right. And all of a sudden now the kind of the routine just slides off, and this other thing just kind of slides off. And what happened with the gym not being there is you got a check and balance, right? Because all of a sudden you have to sit with your own thoughts that you've now created over this last however long, right? And it's harder when there's longer cemented ideas, because now it's like you're sitting there thinking, well, I should probably get my routines in check, because now I don't even have the gym. And then at first it's like, oh, I don't really want to do that. That sounds difficult. And you're the type of person to stare into the abyss of that and go, you know, you just kind of auto-regulate, do this as a person. Some of it can be taught and some of it's, you know, just nature versus nurture. But my client Heather quoted this and I thought it was pretty good. I told her something because we were having a conversation and I said, well, it sounds like there's a bunch of things that you want to run away from because they're difficult and unknown. And I said, usually, if you want to run away from something, you probably shouldn't. And, you know, for your regard, maybe you kind of wanted initially in that knee-jerk moment reaction. This is where change actually occurs. That's why I'm breaking it down like this.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you when you hurt your foot and realized, okay, now you've had this conversation, which there's probably a fear, an anxietal fear that was projected into the future about having to come up with a potential conclusion that you might have to take 1 to 2 weeks off. And then you're thinking, oh, that's kind of negative emotion right away. Ugh, what's the cost of that? Well, I might lose some gains. I might blah, blah, have to eat less because it's rest days, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's a list of things that immediately come up. And you're like, okay. And then your fear or sort of anxietal projection comes true. Shit. Okay, I do have to take this time off. I've talked to my coach, a few friends, whatever it may be, my care doctor. And we all decided, well, they decided, and I'm going to listen, that this is a good thing to do. Right. Good. Quote unquote, good. And now you've done this. So you have all this cost of making this choice. But there's such an opportunity when you look at what can be the opportunity that comes from this. And you just sort of sat down and did that. Right. But initially you probably had a fear of like running, like, no, I'm just going to wait 3 days and go. And there's probably all these little psychological interjects at every moment that you're going through this time. And you're having to use discipline because you believe in the movement or idea that you came up with from ground zero, which was like, it's good for me to take a week and a half off because of X, Y, Z. Right. So you have to consider the cost of inaction. Because who do you become if you don't take the week and a half off, right? Well, that's one time, right?
Yeah.
But what happens when this scales into the future? We get clients like this who owe their body like 9 to 12 weeks off after a decade of training that they didn't make the hard decisions in the moment when they needed to. And now they can't bargain with their future because their psychology cannot be trusted to them. Because they didn't make the right choice at any other time. So these microclism changes that happen on the micro level when you have to fight your own bullshit in the right now. You know, like there was lots and I'm very tired today. It would have been easy for me to like, let's just postpone the podcast. Let's do this. You know, no, no, because I've set out a target. And, you know, of course, because life is going to come with its actual interjections that might flatten you on that day, right? Like, you know, if I had gotten to a car crash or, you know, got 4 flat tires or whatever it is, it's like, that might be a real thing that I would have had to cancel the podcast
for. Absolutely.
So I don't need to let my own bullshit give me another 20 or 30% reasoning on top of every choice or difficult thing that I'm doing as to why I shouldn't. Because then between life itself, which has its actual fluctuation problems, and then my own bullshit, I'm not doing it 60% of the time. And that's not enough to see forward movement in progress. Therefore, I'm stuck using willpower and the shame, blame, and guilt, old story and building up resent that I've talked about 100 times. But you're missing it. That's where you're missing it. It's on that micro level that Anthony is describing about how he made all these minor changes to optimize what he could optimize. And I guarantee you, if I was to sit down with him right now in a very private conversation where we could just have free-flowing language, if I said, Anthony, did you like taking a week and a half off the gym? The answer is like, no way, not even close. And it would be much different language to describe that.
At the time, I would have said no. At the time, I would have said no. But now looking back on it, this is what everyone gets to I created like a 30-minute video on recovery, say, for my athletes. And the one thing was like, how do you know if you are under recovered? I had a section like that. And I was like, important in the thing, I was like, you have to tell me if you are feeling any of these things. Like, but you need to learn yourself how to diagnose that because I can't do it for you. I was like, I can only read some of the signs that might say that you need, that you are actually under recovered, but I can't be the one to make that choice. If you keep telling me, hey, you feel great, you feel great, you don't feel smoked in the gym, like you feel great, we're going to keep pushing. And I've had that with a few athletes where, hey, you keep pushing, and guess what? It, you end up digging a hole that's hard to get out of. I told them, I was like, you can tell me whether you're feeling smoked and take like 4 days off the gym and like have three sessions where you go a little bit less on the R and go on the RIR scale, and then you're back in a week, or you can keep telling me that you're not smoked and that adds up, that adds up, that adds up. You keep telling yourself you're good, and next thing you know, hey, we have to take those, we have to take 2 months off for a health phase because you kept deciding to continue on. And you decided to put yourself into a hole that now I have to take time out of what the timeline was to deal with this issue because you didn't communicate correctly to me how you were actually feeling. And I actually looked back on it and I got my notification today because it came up finally. And it was like, how much time, what was your average screen time this week? You want to know what my average, I told my athletes this, so I'm going to admit it on here too. My average screen time before that week off was like 13 hours. It was like 12, 13 hours. Not including my work life either. That's like on my phone. You want to know how much I've got it down to within the last 2 weeks? Seven hours and 20 minutes.
That's where mine is.
I found out I don't need this the first 2 hours of my morning. Like, I don't need it at all. Like, obviously now I might do it because I have cardio some mornings, but I'm putting on a YouTube video and that's it. Like, I'm not actually answering any DMs. I'm not doing anything the first 2 hours of the day. Why? Because I've given myself now enough time in the morning to have those few hours and still have time to answer things before I even start my full-time job. And now I shut this thing off. This thing has been off now since 7 o'clock at night. Like, this does not stay on. I answer everything from 7 to 7:30 onward on my computer where I put a red light filter on. Like, I'm starting to find things that I needed to change. And I actually went over this and I was like, what causes you anxiety? And this thing was causing me a bunch of fucking anxiety. So what did I have to do? I had to make the hard choice over, hey, do I limit my social interactions I could possibly be having with friends at this time for my own well-being? Or do I run the risk of keep doing what I was doing and see through, hey, maybe it is worth the social interactions or maybe it's not. But you mentioned, hey, we have to sacrifice for certain goals at certain times. I know what I want to complete right now. And I'm like, my bodily health and my mental health need this break to not be on this.
You just sparked an idea for me to kind of segue, but not really, because you talked about recovery, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, listening to your body. Now, I've talked about the stuff I've been talking about plenty of times before. So I thought about that. And I'm like, because I had these ideas today and I'm like, well, how do I say this without saying the exact same philosophical nonsense I've already said? Because maybe that's not enough. Maybe I need to try harder and think of a different way to say it. So I got thinking about recovery today also, using myself. Always my best ideas come from, because I can pick my own thoughts apart. And then I find patterns where other, especially because I have a decent amount of clients, it's easy to see where people are struggling. And if I have an intersectional struggle there or a momentary struggle, right? So I'm going to tell two stories at the same time. Hopefully this will make sense and try to make my point. I had a consult call with Victor, one of my old mentors. This last It was just, I really like talking to him because for some reason, we have the same sort of bird's eye view at looking at a whole bunch of different things. And we were talking about training volume and recovery. So that's why when you brought up recovery just now, this made me think this might be relevant. And we were talking about a couple examples of clients that he worked with that are pretty good, well-known UK bodybuilders. And I don't need to repeat their names just because I'm I don't like, I didn't talk to them. I don't know them that personally, but they're good UK bodybuilders and coaches.
Yeah.
And one of them's about 50 years old. One's about 30. And obviously the 50 year old has 25 years of training experience, maybe more. And the other one has at least a decade. And these are enhanced bodybuilders, very experienced. And they both did an off season growth phase with Victor. And Victor's training models are very different from what you and I would prescribe, or basically anyone in our circle. It would be a mix. It would be like if we had Dr. Mike and Dorian get along and have an ideological brainchild. It's like a mix of everything. He doesn't have any biases. That's one thing I like about his stuff. It's like, no, this is just what I found to work and for some people. And he started asking them in their initial consults. So this is where I'll get to the point. What do you feel like is some of the things that, you know, you deep down you think just aren't working? And the one guy said, like, you know, in the UK, it's been beat into our heads that we have, you know, we do these low volume, kind of low volume, and that's different for everyone. And he understood this. He's very, very articulate, you know, lower volume, progressive loading model. Loading being the progressive part being on the load itself mostly. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, like, deep down, I feel like I just don't build that and I can't do that every workout. And, you know, it doesn't seem, even though I try really hard and I have had clients now, because they both these guys had the same idea that they've been coaches long enough to see that, like, that sometimes I don't know. And so Victor does like a progressive volume model. Also, along with a loading model for people that respond to that. So he doesn't have like one way. So he tried this thing and he asked the 50-year-old after they had done it and they both put on about 15 pounds of tissue and they're leaner. It was both their results were mind-blowing to me after getting shown. And 50-year-old Victor asked, what did you think about the training plan? And he said, well, I looked at it when I got it and I thought there's 0% chance I'm going to recover from this. I'm going to be completely screwed, especially in the later, mesos, when the volume was apparently quite high. He was like, zero, all that sets, I'm dead. And the younger guy, Victor said the exact same thing. So Victor's running like an anecdote study, sort of, in his own right, and then getting the information, funneling it to me in one kind of piece, you know? And they both had the same ideas. And both of them were blown away and found out that about halfway through the training cycle, they actually found the complete opposite. And the 50-year-old said he felt like when he was 20 years old again. And I got thinking, okay, they're completely different ages. Why is that? Maybe. And I started thinking about that and I thought recovery is probably the biggest piece of felt recovery is probably your like psychological balance with things and movement forward towards a bunch of the different things you're aiming at. So, and then so to use the other story is I reverse engineered this with myself and I got thinking, because I'm very good with self-awareness, especially like psychophysiological. I can feel my body shift with my mood because I've had so many of my own struggles with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very interested in improving these things. So one of the things I notice is I can train with low volume and low sessions, like 3 to 4 days a week only, because I've had to do that when I'm bogging myself down with work and don't have time for my very limited social interaction that I get as an introvert. I don't have time to get on calls with you and do like fun programming stuff. And I don't get to do, even though it might not be fun or fulfilling to someone else, all these weird things that I like to do once in a while in limited free times for myself. When that gets downregulated, there's almost no amount of training volume that makes my body feel like it's not smoked. However, when I'm on my studies and my mental progress, my psychological conditioning, and I'm, you know, vibing with the people in my circles and things are going well, I could train 6 days a week and feel recovered. Now, I'm not talking about the physiological, what's going on the inside. Like, are you recovered? That's why we track biofeedback and all the stuff Anthony's talking about prior. But the feeling is so subjective, and that's why you have to pay attention how do you feel when you've done something like actually really difficult? And then compare that feeling to how you feel when you've done something medium difficult. How do you feel when you've given your body a bunch of workouts, but you've slacked off on all of your sort of like anxiety management routines?
How do you feel like me?
Yeah. How do you feel when you've crushed your anxiety management routines and your relationships and your career stuff and all the, you know, kind of your immediate needs as a human being, but you've not challenged your body at all physically, really? They both provide a different kind of poor feeling, or sort of, again, a water that is, you want something to drink, but you don't really know what it is until you do it. And you're like, oh, that was the thing. That's it. I needed that. And that's by fulfilling all these different obligational things that we all have that are kind of like species related and then individual related, right? So things we need as a human being, and then the things you need as a human being based on the intricacies of your life as an individual. So I think that's such a good point, man. It's like making these small intersectional changes, like right now, and deciding that, like, no, not tomorrow, not on Tuesday, with these little behavior things. Usually you have to decide like in that moment, right? You identify that, like, oh shit, like your first day off the gym or second day, whenever the boredom kicked in and you realize, like, okay, how much more can I look at this stupid phone? Like, I'm like tired of looking at it, and there's nothing, I don't want it anymore, but that's all I'm doing. And then you're like, oh yeah, because I don't have like a good, I can't sit with my thoughts because I haven't been practicing the meditation.
That's exactly it. Because you can't, that's exactly what I said word for word to my athletes. I was like, if you cannot get off the phone, I was like, number one, you're stressed. Number two, you cannot handle being on your own, and you are dependent on this thing to relieve yourself of anxiety when you're not actually, it's a Band-Aid that's actually being ripped off every single fucking day, no matter what. You think it's a Band-Aid, but it's more so just things opening the wound. It's more so just knife marks, just opening the wound even deeper.
You know, and one of the things that we forget, we try to forget that we're animals, but we can use animals to kind of reverse engineer what we're actually doing. So imagine yourself very stressed out, knowing that you have some responsibilities, both personal and maybe communal, that you haven't taken care of quite to the way that you should be for a continual amount of time. Maybe something like what Anthony's personal development goal he has, but his goal didn't change. Anthony's goal is to become the best Anthony. So that was static, but the behaviors over time started drifting away from that. And then that produces like an unhappiness, let's say.
Yep.
Right. So you're sitting with your phone and you have this anxiety and you have this stress. We see this with dogs. We see this with chimpanzees. If you make animals very anxious, they'll do anything but sit there quietly. Dogs will like bark and tear their own hair off. They'll literally do anything. Eat the drywall. Continually run back and forth throughout the house. Yawn. Chew their own feet. Chew their paws. They do weird shit. Anything besides sit and think about what they're thinking about. Right? And that's us on that phone. You're just not, you get to look normal amongst your peers doing it. Because it's like a nice iPhone that's technologically advanced that doesn't make noise, or you don't look like a crazy person for doing. But that's us. We're literally the dog chewing on our foot half the time, or wrecking the drywall, where if you were doing that and another person saw you, you'd be like, hey, you should not do that. You should fix what's going on, you know? But we've been able to hide from ourselves with these comforts, right? So here's an idea. I think sometimes what happens is we're at the place of discomfort, but not quite enough. It's this blissful kind of comfort, right? Where you can hide from stuff. So for instance, you know, let's say your number one goal, and this was my goal when I moved out, you know, I had to live in some very poor apartments, you know, just like in very poor areas. Cause I moved out I wasn't even 16 years old. You know, like what money do you have at that age to be renting apartments and things? Not much.
Yeah.
So my goal was literally to get a better apartment because, like, for multiple reasons. Anyway, Well, I can tell you what motivated me. Coming home every night and like having crime going on above and below me, and not sleeping because of this, and having like mold in the bathroom, and I could go down the list. Versus if I had like an okay apartment, but I wasn't quite achieving what I wanted to, but it was just comfortable enough that, hey, I have a good couch and I made this room really pretty, and it's not too noisy. It's easy just to sit there, right? So I think making yourself uncomfortable creates the need for the warranting need for change that leads to action, right? So when you make yourself uncomfortable, you made yourself uncomfortable by deciding no phone past this time. Well, then at about 7:06 on the first day, you're like, oh shit, it's been 6 minutes and I already felt my first little kind of jolt of uncomfortableness.
I'm like, let's go and let's like see if I want to go on
It's
Instagram on my computer. I was like,
gonna be a
let's at least use my computer. I was like, nope, I'm gonna sit here and watch a YouTube video. I was like, that's it. I was like, Anthony, you need to get off this. I was like, if I get a notification from WhatsApp, I'll answer it. But once I told them today, I straight up, I was like, I am not reachable past this time anymore. I was like, all my notifications go off. Everything goes off because I need time for me, which we're about to do because we got 5 minutes until I take my time for me because I have something set for what I need to do.
We made the point anyway. I think
We
we
do,
articulated
I
it
hope we
from
did that.
a
You have
bunch of
to.
different ways. It's like at the end of the day, you have to reach your hand out and pull yourself with a little effort. And if you've already, made the step of hiring a coach or any of that, great on you, because you're gonna just absolutely turn your journey with more Pareto distribution, because you're gonna have support and help and you're gonna avoid pitfalls. But at the same time, you're not going to avoid the difficulty and the sacrifice,
Nope.
right?
You
So
plan
I
you.
would say that if I, when you set out, for instance, as a professional right now, let's say, or I'm air quoting this for the people that are listening, air quoting as an expert, right? This happens in my own relationship with my fiance, because, and she just asks questions as someone who's not like a crazy fitness person like I am and having it all intertwined in her life. It's like we'll go somewhere and like, oh, well, like how come we can't just like go eat here though? Because she knows enough about nutrition based on hearing me talk, right? That as someone who doesn't have the same goals, she'll be like, well, can't we just get like that takeout place? They just have like rice and chicken. You could just calculate the macros, turn two meals into one, et cetera, et cetera. And is it going to make like a big deal on your physique today? The answer is no, probably not. Like, and I, if I'm not, I'd be not telling the truth if I answered with anything else but that. However, I've chosen to pay Braden to put some intellectual property into me, and I've had to earn that money and pay him for a premium coaching service where Braden didn't say turn two meals into one and just go get takeout, because you know that scientifically and or physiologically you can't. I've created this routine structure for you because I do believe this is the best path for you based on the goals that you want, and you're entrusting me in that. So that's what I do. And I'm like, no, see, to me, that's a waste of money. Because if I start goofing around, maneuvering every little corner I think I can maneuver, I would be down to the point where I'm intuitive eating because I could do that as an expert. Like if I just
Exactly.
wanted to dwindle it down to no results and just maintain this physique that I'm pretty happy with at this point in my life, to be honest. I'm not satisfied, but I am now proud. So it's like I could do that on pretty minimal effort,
Yeah, I think
external effort, like the robot would just take over and it would be very easy. But it's like, no, I'm trying to optimize. So I've decided what I'm going to suck at. And some of those sacrifices are what I'm going to suck at for a little while.
I that's exactly why I asked Mark to push because I nailed down. I messaged him and I was like, I found the pieces that I needed during this week off. Like I messaged him with the check and I was like, I found what I needed during this time to take everything to another level. Like I was wondering what there was needed for another level, and I found what is there, and it's my routine, and it was my routine, and like that was very uncomfortable for me to not go on my phone first thing in the morning, to not go and not stay on my phone until 9:30 at night when I go to bed, like to not do those things. But overall, I mean, it's paying off now. I feel great. I feel way better than ever. My sleep is the best ever. It's like, I feel good. I'm like, I'm loving life. So hope you guys learn something about giving a little bit of effort into things, because just because you hire a coach, it's not going to happen right away. You need to actually push yourself. And if you think you could push harder, ask the coach. They may actually agree. They may be just holding back.
I do this. So, and you know, every coach is different, right? So that's why I think it's important. And I'll be quick here because I know you got to get off. I think it's important you kind of take some time and pay attention to the coaches you're interested in and kind of trying to listen to the way that they think and see if that's going to be a plausible way. I do hang back a little bit. I almost have like I'm waiting for people to prove to me I can push.
So do I.
No, not 0%. I'm not at 0%. I push people, but I'm not 100. Certainly not. Emily, you know, and I only bring her up because she's a client who is on social media a lot, so she won't care that I used her name personally. And secondly, you know, the case personally, you know, from talking about it and just seeing her on social media, she came to me and was like, look, I've been in a health phase for 4 years. Here's, you know, and most of that was before me, unfortunately, but, you know, we have about 2 years of us together, a year and a half now. We've got these, here's what we did achieve. Out of the list of problems I had, she's very articulate, right? So it's like, here's what we did achieve. Here's the stuff we didn't. I'm going actually insane now, because 4 years ago, I wanted to be a different body composition than I am now. And surely she's put on muscle and reshaped, but she wants to push herself. She wants to see if she can remove a little body fat and maintain that and build upon that and all these different things that she didn't get to do for 4 years. And you know, at this point, I was like, you know what? Let's try it. Fuck it. I learned about functional health so I can help people fix things that they might have pushed too far into a little bit of a cave. Let's go. You know, like we might have some consequences to that, but if you're willing to accept some of them or potential some of them, I'll play ball, because she's proven that if we do get into some snags, she will do what's needed to be done, not what's wanted. Doing whatever it takes means even the stuff that you don't necessarily doesn't excite you to do. And I'll leave it at that.
You got to do what's necessary. That's exactly how I feel about the one we talked about earlier. I know she can do it. Just going to take a little. I'm going to push her now to the depths and see what she can handle. And see.
Great podcast, man.
Yeah, great podcast. If you guys enjoyed this episode, we'll be back hopefully with Brayden next week. But we wanted to bring an OG episode, which, I mean, we somehow just pull fucking rabbits out of hats while doing these episodes. As you guys know, you guys could subscribe to the podcast, listen to us on YouTube, listen to us on Spotify or Apple. Go leave us a 5-star rating. Go leave us a review. Subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, please. Let's see. If you guys are interested in coaching, Dylan and I both have spots open. Go over to the Team Miller Elite website and go apply there, or go to our bios on Instagram. As you guys know, the podcast is teamed up with Morphogen Nutrition. You guys can use code SPADA for 10% off, or you can go to Supplement World and actually use mention you're on Team Miller Elite, and you guys will get a nice little discount code too there to help everyone out in Canada.
US, we got the market covered now, man.
Yeah. So, other than that, if you guys enjoyed this episode, share it on Instagram, tag Dylan and I. We think this one will definitely be impactful, as ours have been before. So, yeah. So thank you guys for listening to this episode of we're Coach's Corner. Technically, we are Coach's Corner with this one on the Ace of Spada podcast.
See you guys later.